Earlier this week, the 2020 Minnesota legislative session came to its conclusion, though there is talk of a special session. Julie Sandstead is a DFL representative from Hibbing, and she is back with us on KEXE KBXE. Good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, congratulations. You made it through. It had to be one of the strangest legislative sessions to go through.
It certainly was.
Yeah.
It certainly was.
Well, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what your priorities were as you went into the session and then how they changed as it went on and how everyone's lives changed.
Absolutely. Thanks for the question. I've only been doing this legislating for 4 years. So really in the scope of things, it's still a pretty new experience for me. And each year that I go into the legislature, I expect what's going to be something of a roller coaster ride. It's the nature of the job. And when I went into this session, my priorities were really focused on bonding. Bonding was probably my number one priority. Broadband has been an ongoing priority for me up in this district. And then certainly things in terms of education, which is, you know, something I'm very passionate about, and then just diversifying the economy, anything that we can do to diversify the economy. So I went in with a fairly narrow focus, trying to do a few things well instead of trying to do all sorts of things. And I think we were off to a good start. As COVID hit, those priorities didn't change, but I think my expectations of how much was going to be able to, you know, get done definitely became pared down. Bonding became even more important to me as the session went on. As we watched the pandemic hit, we realized, you know, and continue to realize the economic devastation it's having on our state, and the need for this bonding bill, jobs bill, became all the more important with so many needs in terms of health issues or public safety, water quality issues, and again, roads, bridges, public safety type of issues. Those things don't go away whether there's a pandemic or not. Those remain in place. Education became very, very pared down. We're looking, you know, overnight, virtually overnight. Teachers had to learn a new way to deliver education, which is this distance learning, you know, is not anything we've gone to school for. There's been no teacher preparation, no training for that. So doing whatever we can do to support our teachers, our students, their families, the schools, in distance learning became a focus. And then, you know, it's a perfect segue to talk about broadband. COVID really shone a bright light on where across the state we have definite holes in connectivity, and we have a lot of that going up here. So where the governor ordered or, you know, requested distance learning, I think many districts equated that to an e-learning, which is not the same, but that's the delivery method most places have gone to, and it's made it very, very difficult for many of our students and their families. You know, I live in an area where we have fairly good connectivity, but all five of us are at home, working, going to school, and it's, you know, it's really putting a tax kind of on how strong and strength our bandwidth is and what we're able to do. So you get into a little bit more of a rural area, that becomes more of a challenge. And then really looking even as a state, you know, statewide, just shoring up some of the good things that we were able to get done. We're creating some funds with some emergency dollars, especially channeling federal dollars coming in for our healthcare workers, our frontline workers, and there's still more work to be done on that. But that became where that wasn't a priority in the beginning because we really didn't see COVID coming. It definitely became a priority once the pandemic hit.
So the bonding bill did not pass, right?
No, the bonding bill did not pass.
Yeah.
And no.
Do you have hopes that there'll be a special session? Is there a possibility, or is that just going to go to next session?
No, I do feel quite confident that there will be a special session. Even before session ended, we had been given a date of June 12th, that there would be a special session June 12th. Now, whether we stick to that date or not, I don't know, but I do anticipate that we will have a special session. And I think one of the biggest priorities of a special session is going to be the bonding bill. Going into this legislative session, there was a great appetite on both sides of the aisle to have a bonding bill, as is, you know, the nature of the two-party system. It always comes down to the dollar figure. Democrats typically like something a little bit more robust. Republicans tend to be a little bit more on the conservative side. The bottom line is, what dollar figure can we really agree on? And when the pandemic struck, we had not come to any kind of budgetary targets. And so we were playing with projected numbers. You know, I think we certainly knew what the need across the state is. We certainly know the number of projects that had been submitted for consideration. We know what that dollar amount came out to, and it was well over $500 billion. Democrats were looking at a $3.5 billion with $700 million in cash. Republicans were not specific in saying what their dollar amount is, but my sense was they were probably closer to around a $2 billion bonding bill. And once the pandemic hit and the state was projected to be in a financial deficit, those numbers changed drastically. So we were over two or around two when the bill was put together and heard on the floor last weekend, and it did not pass. So we have some more work to do.
So, Julie,
but I'm confident we will have one. Usually when you go back, it's never as, you know, the dollar amount is never as high as the first time around. Projects are going to have to get, you know, some projects are definitely going to get cut. But the needs are still there, and the needs are across the state of Minnesota. And it doesn't really matter if you're a Democrat or a Republican at that point. The needs are there. And I think everybody recognizes that.
Julie, this is John Bauer. You mentioned earlier that there's holes in the broadband. Can you paint a picture to us of maybe where those holes are and where it's not happening?
You know, it's very interesting in my district. Thanks for that question, too. In my district, you can be 2 miles outside of Hibbing and not have connectivity. You can be in Balkan Township and have terrible connectivity, Cherry area. When you head up towards Big Fork Marcel, it's quite a bit across, you know, St. Louis County, Itasca County, and it's throughout the state, actually. And of course I'm representing my district, but statewide we see little pockets where there's underserved or unserved areas. And rural Minnesota, just, you know, as a blanket statement, rural Minnesota is definitely experiencing this a little bit more than anywhere else.
That's Representative Julie Sandstead. She's a representative from Hibbing. She is a DFLer. Now, you're a representative, you're a politician. Politics obviously plays into lots of this. It's also a session where everybody is up for re-election, senators and representatives.
Right.
But it seemed like as the session began, people were making choices together, or, you know, it wasn't as political. And then it was, and I don't mean to show a bias here, but I found it really difficult to see the Democratic legislators wearing masks on the floor and not Republicans wearing masks. And I just imagine for you guys, or even, you know, even if you were remotely, because not everybody was there, you were able to do some things remotely to stay safe, that had to be really tough to deal with.
It was extremely difficult. It was extremely difficult. And as I started out this interview stating, each time I go into a session, I anticipate a little bit of a roller coaster ride, but none as jarring as this session was. Nothing. I don't think anybody could have been prepared for what this session was like. And to your comment, sessions started out fairly typical. When the pandemic struck, we had about, oh, I would say 2 to 4 weeks of, 2 weeks for sure, of some of the most unified focus, vision, support, action between the Democrats and the Republicans. We all recognized that this was, you know, really an unusual circumstance. It was the unknown. We wanted to protect our communities, our families, you know, the state. We wanted to put safety guard rails in place where we certainly could. We were working in a very cohesive and unified way with each other, and then even up through the federal government. And as time has gone on and the orders to stay home have continued and the dial was turned back significantly, people were good for a while, but as again, the time went on, you know, we started to see things change and attitudes change. And certainly, there is no way of saying the governor is handling it perfectly or not perfectly. How could anybody during this time handle it perfectly? There is no perfect way of handling circumstances like this. They certainly are doing their best, and there's going to be opinions on both sides, whether it's the right way or the wrong way, constitutional, not constitutional. But I think what became more frustrating for me than even wearing a mask or not wearing a mask became the last 2 weeks of session where we forgot. I don't want to say we as in totality, but there were some who clearly were forgetting their role. The governor's role is to be the governor, and whether we like the call or not, he is the governor. My role and other people's role is as legislators, and our work is done within the House of Representatives. Or if you're a senator, your work is done within the Senate. But it wasn't, I mean, and there were plenty of bills before us to address and hopefully pass or debate, you know, to really flesh out and do the work within the House, the work within the Senate, and let the governor and the administration and the judicial branch do their work. But the last 2 weeks became a game of, and I'm sorry to say it, but blaming and shaming the governor and saying what's wrong rather than focusing on the bills and the work that were in front of us. And that's where it becomes very political. That is where it becomes sound bites and it becomes about the next election. And for me personally as a legislator, that is not why I got into this. This is, I chose to run to do the work of the people and not to become partisan and not to just, you know, work towards the next election. And especially in a time of pandemic when people are hurting, people are out of work, people need housing and food, and they have genuine concerns about, you know, their own health and their family's health when they're on the front line. It just, it's a very difficult pill for me to swallow to see those political games, you know, emerge.
Some of the response from House Republicans has been about, you know, you talked about it, but how much power the governor has had since we're in a peacetime emergency and he's been able to do these executive orders. Were you behind that happening? And, you know, for those of us who don't understand how the legislature works, or, you know, it's not part of our everyday life, How do you think it could have been different if those things weren't happening, those executive orders?
Oh, my goodness. I don't know that I would have said it should have been different without the executive orders. To be clear, everything that has transpired has been within the purview of the legislature. We gave the governor the authority. You know, he has the right to declare a peacetime emergency. That is his authority as it was before COVID hit. And we, you know, he consulted, we agreed. Like I said, we started out in a very unified way. Once the executive, well, and executive orders are different. Well, I should say that the stay-at-home order is different than the peacetime emergency. And the peacetime emergency, you know, has ended basically or will be ending. The executive orders are ongoing only to a point. And as you have seen, he is starting to turn that dial back up and opening things up. What is difficult in this, and I think if I had a, you know, what I would do differently if I were in the governor's shoes, and I'm not, let's be clear on that. It's very hard to understand within his orders. He'll give an example of businesses, you know, and in terms of opening up, he'll make some recommendations and make some statements. Certain businesses can open up because they've demonstrated basically a safety plan. It's been approved. And then the groups I'm hearing about now are churches, for instance. And they will say, well, we can do the same thing. We can do social distancing. We can have outdoor services. We can do different things like that. Why is it good for one and not good for another group? And those are the answers I don't have. It would be certainly easier in some ways to have just standards that, you know, whether you're a church or a business or whatever, if you can demonstrate this, here's what we would recommend safe guidelines look like. And if you fall within that category, okay. But if you don't, then you need to wait. But again, you know, it's really easy to make a suggestion or a statement. I don't have all the information. I'm not sitting on the inside of the administration or of his cabinet. I'm not hearing all of the updates that they're receiving. I don't have the connectivity with the federal government to know what is or what isn't available from them. So, I don't know. It's easy to say, make a recommendation, but again, I don't have all the information.
Yeah. Well, that's Representative Julie Sandstad. Thank you so much for your time today. We hope to talk to you again soon. Hope you're getting some rest after this crazy session.
Rest quickly and back at it.
There you go. Thank you. Good to talk to you.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
You too.